Sunday evenings are special, and you're special for being here. Our times that we're living in keep pressing us with more and more obligations and more situations that we have no control over. But Sunday evenings are special, but you're commended, and there are some that don't take that much church. Heard me say that. But it must take a lot of church. You must be a bunch of sinners that need a lot of church. You remember a couple of Sunday nights ago, we were talking about the stories of grace that Jesus taught. And I don't want to run it in the ground, but I love to talk about the way he himself incorporated himself in the parables. But there were two we noticed, the one on the prodigal son, and the elder brother's response to the grace that was given the younger brother. And then the workers in the vineyard and the all-day workers and the one-hour workers and the response that the all-day workers gave to the one-hour workers getting the same pay was what? That's not fair. So we noticed those, and the principle is simply this. There are going to be people who receive the grace of God that you don't think deserve it. They're going to know less than you. They're going to be less correct than you. They're going to be less loving. They're going to be less faithful. They're going to be less everything than you. They will have spent less time than you. But there'll also be people who have done more than you, believed more than you. They have loved more than you. They have served more than you. And God knows who's in his vineyard, and he knows who deserves what, and he's got us covered both ways. If we have to step aside and let some people go in that we didn't think deserve it, that's all right. There's some other people having to step aside and letting us go in, and they don't think we deserve it. So we've got it covered both ways. Now, tonight, there's another story that Jesus told that I'm subtitling, Grace with a Hook in It. Grace with a Hook in It. The receiving of grace is not the end of the story. Is there any responsibility connected with grace? Is there any hook in it? Is there any responsibility to it? Let me tell you this and see if you catch it. A young man down in Corpus Christi, Texas, I'm not sure when it happened, but he said to me one day, he said, you know, ever since this church heard about grace, there never has been enough food at our church suppers. I don't know, that'll kind of grab you in a minute. I don't quite know what it says, except I think that once people, you mean I'm not required to bring 3 pecan pies? I'll just bring 1. So he says, ever since they've learned about grace, there's never been enough food at the suppers. For some reason, I thought that was always humorous. But what responsibility is there connected with grace? Yes. Yes, that's it. That's it. Okay, what he was saying was the two debtors. Yeah, but what chapter is it in? That's what. Turn to Matthew. By the way, turn to Matthew, the 18th chapter, and look at verse 23. Matthew 18 is where it is. And we're going to just enjoy a study. I've learned some things tonight that I had never known in my life until I was doing some last-minute preparation for this lesson. And I learned some things that have puzzled me. For 40 years, I learned, I think, the answer to it. Turn to the 18th chapter of Matthew and listen to this parable. Starting in verse 23. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. The servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I'll pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him and canceled the debt and let him go. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii, about $17. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell on his knees and begged him, be patient and I'll pay you back. almost verbatim. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into jail until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. "You wicked servant," he said, "I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you?" In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all that he owed. Wow. What about that story? The story, though, was occasioned by a question by Simon Peter. Look up above where we started. Look in verse 21. Just above this parable, that's where Jesus means when he said, "therefore," meaning after what Peter had asked. Listen to what Peter asked. "Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, 'Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother and when he sins against me? Up to seven times?' Jesus answered, 'I tell you, not seven times, but 70 times seven.'" And I like that translation better. It's either 77 times or 70 times seven. But Jesus used hyperbole. All those Middle Eastern countries did that. And it was their culture at the time. They used hyperbole. Like when he said, if your hand offends you, do what? Cut it off and throw it away from you. Well, he uses a hyperbole. I think this is, but either way, either 70 times 7 or 77. So Jesus said, "I tell you, not 7 times, but 70 times 7. Well, that was the question that's the answer to Peter's question. Peter said, "How many times should I forgive? 7? He was being generous. I think the tradition was that forgive a brother 4 times, then after that, zap him. The Jewish tradition was 4 times. Peter was adding 3 to that to just be generous. But Jesus said, "Oh, Peter, good night. Not 7 times, 70 times 7. In other words, just keep on forgiving. Now, let's not miss the point. He would not have commanded Peter to do that unless what? Unless he himself were doing that himself. Now, that's a very important point. It's not the point of the lesson tonight. But look up above it. Peter's question was occasioned by a story that Jesus told, or a statement that he made beginning back in verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you've won your brother over. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of 2 or 3 witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan and a tax collector." That was one of the statements he made. There are 2 more. I've understood that one, but I've never understood this one. "I tell you the truth, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." He's talking about here disagreements between brethren. And I've always thought he was talking to the apostles, and you know, I think the Catholic Church uses this as authority that says whatever Peter bound on earth was going to be bound in heaven, and whatever Peter loosed on earth was going to be loosed in heaven. I don't think it has anything to do with that at all. He's talking in the context here about, in the word loose here, just change it to the word forgive. Whatever you don't forgive on earth is not going to be forgiven in heaven. And whatever you do forgive, whatever you loose on earth, is going to be loosed in heaven. And then in verse 19, "Again, I tell you that if 2 of you on earth agree," here we're still talking about 2 people, and agreeing, getting together. And if you can't get it together, get somebody to go with you. There's a third party. "Again, I tell you that if 2 of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where 2 or 3 come together in my name, there I am with them." I think the whole context of this has to do with settling arguments among brethren. Any yeas or nays on that? I think the whole context. And this, in fact, from verse 15 on down through the end of the chapter, Jesus Christ is talking about how do you respond to people whenever they've offended you. And he says, go to them. If you can't do it, take somebody with you. And whatever you loose on earth is going to be loose. Whatever you forgive on earth, I'll recognize it. Whatever you don't forgive on earth, That's going to be recognized in heaven also. And then he just says, for where two or three of you are gathered together in my name, and you come together and you try to get this thing worked out, I'm going to be right there in the middle with you. Who are these characters? First of all, who is the king in this story? Who is the king? God is the king. And here's an interesting thought, I think. Jesus always, he always stepped aside and let his Father occupy the position of the king. With one exception. There's one exception, and it's in Luke, the 19th chapter, verse 12. And here, there was this man of noble birth, Luke, the 19th chapter, and verse 12. The man of noble birth went to a far country to have himself appointed king. Well, you see, even though he was this man of noble birth, that's Jesus, and he went into this far country, he went back from here, went to the far country, but even then, he was appointed, which means that there was somebody over the king, somebody higher than the king. So Jesus always allowed his Father, I say he always allowed it, he always stepped back and let his Father take the position of the king. Well, okay, so God is the king in this story. Second, who is the servant that owed 10,000 talents? When Jesus told Peter this story, who is the one that owed 10,000 talents? Peter was the one. Peter was the one that owed whom? He owed God 10,000 talents. Couldn't begin to pay him back. Who was the one who owed the $17, the 100 denarii? If God was the king, Simon Peter's the one that owes him 10,000 talents, who is the man that owed Peter $17? Anybody that, you know, his friends or people that he didn't like, somebody had done something against him, some piddling little something that wasn't worth 17 bucks. Okay, now another question. Where do you fit into the parable? Which character represents you? It's not God. Does that surprise you? It's not God. You only have two other choices, either the one who owes 10,000 talents or the one that owes $17. Which one are you? You are the one, and I'm the one. We're all people who owe God owe him $10 million, say, and haven't got a chance to repay it. Who is the one who owes us $17? Your wife. Your husband, your mama and your daddy, because they didn't let you go to maybe some place you wanted to go visit. They wouldn't let you go see a movie you wanted to see. So you know what you do? You just sell up. You go in there and slam your door and go in there and sulk. And you carry that grudge and carry it and carry it and carry it. You refuse to forgive them. Okay, you hear the characters, and this parable is an absolute jewel. How many times have you sinned against God? There's no way of counting the times. There's no way of counting the times that you've put up other gods before God, that you've worshipped other things other than God. And there's no way of counting the time, and there's no way the times, and there's no way of counting the weight of the offense against God. And then you mean to tell me that you're going to hold a grudge against somebody that did something quite, he pulled out in front of you at a red light, or swerved around you and sped it, and you're going to be angry with that? Now, this is not to make light. There are some offenses that are more than $17. And there's some people perhaps here even tonight who have been abused by their parents, abused by their brothers. Some of you have been sexually abused, and I'm not making light of any of those abuses that we've suffered, that you may have suffered. And we mustn't dismiss those as just being $17 offenses. And I don't want to. You know who you are, and I don't. But the lesson here is simply this. The responsibility of receiving grace from God has the hook in it. He expects you to pass it on to other people. And if you are one of those who have been so terribly abused that you are really, you're scarred, perhaps permanently. The forgiveness will not be so much for the offender as it will be to release you from the debt of, or from the burden of carrying that all your life. And that's a whole That's a whole sermon in itself. Well, the lesson of the story is this. The hook in it, the responsibility of it, is simply this. Grace is intended to change us. Grace is intended to change us. Look at here. It's stated explicitly in verses 32. Go back to Matthew 18 now. In verse 32, when this boy, this man in Jesus' story, when he was squealed on, you know, they told on him. When his Lord heard what he had done, he called him in. He said, "You wicked servant, I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?" He's saying here, did it not register? How on earth could you not get the point that I forgave you $10 million and you're not going to forgive this fellow 17? You're going to throw him in jail? That's the story. Grace, the reception of it by you and me, God intends for it to change us. Let me show you something even more than that. Turn over to Luke, the 6th chapter. And this is not in the lesson, I learned this tonight. I learned a bunch today studying this. And in Luke, the 6th chapter, verses 27 starting, this is Luke's parallel account of the Sermon on the Mount that he records. Listen to this. "But I tell you who hear me, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If someone strikes you on the cheek, turn them the other also. If someone takes your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone that asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back." Now, why does that raise the bar, and how does it raise the bar? Now, in Matthew 18, he's talking about forgiving the people that have offended us. What does Jesus mean here? How does it raise the bar? Is he saying forgive the person? He's saying here, don't even take offense. Don't even take offense at what they do to you. Wow. If someone requires you to go 1 mile, do what? Go with them too. That makes chill bumps run all over me at the very thought of it. Don't even take offense. Now here's what the lesson is. Sometimes we go around with our feelings on our sleeves just waiting for somebody, or a chip on our shoulder, waiting for somebody to knock it off. The Christian, if you're going to follow the example of Jesus, he simply says, don't even take offense at those things. Oh, you know. The other day, by the way, I hadn't thought about that till just now. The other day, I interfered. We may have to do a Nixon on this tape. I interfered with a daughter-in-law of mine about the way they raise their children. Mercy. Surely I didn't. And I'll tell you what, I went on and I sent it. But you know those things when it says send? Be careful. Those babies send it. Regardless of what you've written on that computer, send, and it's already gone. You can't say, "Oh, King's X," and drag it back. Well, I sent this to them. And afterwards, I thought, oh me, I hope I did the right thing. Well, I went on and played some racquetball, and I couldn't get it off my mind. Every time I'd serve her, I'd be thinking about her. So I wrote her back, and I said, "Oh, please forgive me. Please forgive me." And don't you know, in the apology, I slipped in another one. I can't believe yet that I did it, but I did. And I said, I said, the next time I do it, just slap me. Well, I wrote her back and I said, "Well, slap me, because I've done it again." In the midst of my apology, I slipped in another bit of advice, and I was so sorry. And she wrote back and she said, "Oh, there's nothing to forgive." Now that's what we're looking at tonight. That's what he's talking about here in Luke. Well, okay, the lesson of the story, grace has a hook attached to it. The responsibility. Grace is intended to change us. Forgive as we've been forgiven. In fact, Jesus said in Matthew's account of the Sermon on the Mount, "Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who've sinned against us." Now, this is changed from the inside out. Look at what he says here in Luke, back in Matthew, the 18th chapter now again. Then we'll draw this to a close. In Matthew 18, what is there peculiar about this verse? Look at verse 35. After he told them what the owner of this servant was going to do to him, he was going to put him in jail till he paid the last, he was going to be tormented till then. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each one of you unless you forgive your brother from what? From your heart. Well, there he goes again, always working from the inside out. Because you know what? You can play the hypocrite. You and I can play the thing and just ignore it and play like we're just good friends with them and all the time just hate their guts. But Jesus, this is how God's going, this is how your Heavenly Father is going to treat you unless you forgive everybody from your heart. His grace given to us intends to change us. It's more than just ought. Do you think you ought to forgive your enemies? Do you believe you ought to forgive your enemies? Why, yeah. Well, big deal. Big deal. That's not any big deal. Sure, you know you ought to forgive them. But there's a big difference between being knowing that you ought to and actually doing it. Because you can spend your life carrying grudges against people. And you know the only person that it hurts is yourself. How many of you ever seen the stage production Les Miserables? You know the story about Jean Valjean, is that his name, isn't it? How many of you seen Les Miserables? Okay, it's a story about a prisoner who was put in jail, I think, for 19 years for stealing a loaf of bread. And when it finally came time that he was released, he was made to wear a yellow badge of some sort to show that he was an ex-convict. But he was released with maybe a dollar, and there he went. Well, he didn't know what to do. You couldn't get a job because you were an ex-convict. He went to this abbey and knocked on the door, and the priest came to the door, and he said, "Could I spend the night?" And the priest said, "Yes, be sure, come in." He made him a bed, bedded down. The priest went off to the other room, went to sleep. During the night, Jean Valjean looked up and saw the candlesticks and all of this silverware. And he got up, took it, put it in a bag, and left. Later that morning, the police came. They had caught him, brought him back to the abbey, and said, "We caught this man with this gold, with this silver candlestick. And we caught him red-handed. We know he's guilty." In the story, the priest said to the man, "Why did you not take this cup, this gold cup? I gave it all to you. Why did you not take it?" And it so overwhelmed this Jean Valjean that the man had, with one word, could have put him back into prison for life. There was no way for him to get out. But with one simple word, he simply turned the story around and let this man experience grace. And it so changed Jean Valjean that he spent the rest of his life doing what David said in his prayer, looking after orphans and widows and taking care of those who were in need. He learned the lesson. Well, Jesus, it works. His way of living works. We're to pass on to other people the same kindness that we've received from God. That's what Jean Valjean did. He spent the rest of his life doing that. The only hook in grace is simply this: just what you've had done for you, do for other people. What if we don't do it? What if we insist on living lives where we're going to an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth? And you know, girls sometimes, they know how to do that and do it to each other just subtly. You don't go out with clubs, but you just, with a twist of a word, you can make a little girl feel like she's nothing. I saw that on television today, yesterday. You know, y'all are smarter than us men. It takes a club for us to get somebody, not these girls. They can do it just and tweak you and smile at you at the same time. What if you go through life choosing to go eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth What if you decide, that hurts me too much, I'm not going to forgive you? What's the alternative? Well, we don't want to know. We're going to be called before God, and He's going to ask us the same thing that He asked this servant in this story. You wicked servant, I forgave all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Should you not have also forgiven this one who owed you? And then he says, he will deliver him to the tormentors. In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all that he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each one of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart. We write our own check. It's up to you. It's up to me. We write our own check. He says to you, here's the blank check. I've signed it. I'll forgive you as long as you forgive other people. I'll forgive you. It's up to us. Oh my, we serve a God. We serve the only God who is God. We serve a God who is so brilliant, and He is so absolutely all-powerful, and He is all-knowing, and He's all-present, and yet He has condescended to come down here and walk with you and me and show us how to live lives that are full and free. God bless His memory, and let's not hold back anything from Him.